Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. My next guest has the cover story in the brand new issue of Time on the embassy attacks and the film that sparked the violence. Bobby Ghosh is Time editor-at-large, former Baghdad bureau chief and world editor, and he takes a close look at what he calls agents of outrage, the anti-Islam groups in the West behind films like Innocence of Muslims, and the anti-Western groups in the Islamic world who whip up and profit from the resulting rage. Hey, Bobby, welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
And let's start here. Who exactly is behind this film, if there's even an actual film and not just a trailer?
Well, as I say in my cover story, there's a whole cast of characters ranging from whoever made the movie, whether that person's name is really Sam Basile or not is irrelevant.
On yesterday's show, we identified, based on press reports, the filmmaker of the movie as an American-Israeli or Israeli-American named Sam Basile. Is that not clear?
No, at this point, there's a lot. It's very murky. There are a number of possible suspects, if you like. It would appear that Sam Basile is a pseudonym. Who the real person behind it is questionable. It seems less and less likely now that this person is an Israeli or even an Israeli American. But the larger point, I think, is that the identity of the exact filmmaker is a smaller issue. It's an issue, but a smaller one. The point is that there's a pastor in Florida who picks up on the movie and runs with it. There is a Coptic American
that pastor is the same guy, Terry Jones, famous for saying he was going to burn the Quran a few years ago, sparking all that outrage.
Actually burning the Quran eventually. Yes. There's an Egyptian American of Coptic Christian faith who then linked to the video and sent it out in a mass email and posted it on a blog, and then the cast of characters moves to Egypt. There's a inflammatory television host who picks up on this video and goes to town with it, and pretty soon in the streets of Cairo, people think that this is a mainstream movie that is being that's about to open in 1,000 cinemas, where in reality it screened in one cinema in Hollywood months and months ago, and it sank without a trace. So, you know, this is my point, is that this is not a spontaneous explosion of the street that we are seeing in Cairo and Libya and today in Yemen, that there are people involved who have stoked this, who have taken an obscure movie that was destined to die an unknown death and turned it into a cause célèbre and have turned this rage on in the street. And this is what we describe as the industry of outrage that exists both in this country as well as in the Middle East, that leads directly to, I think you can draw a straight line between that and the death of four American diplomats.
On the Middle Eastern side, who benefits from this industry of outrage?
Well, any number of people. There are extremist individuals with television shows that they want ratings for by taking an extremist line. There are political parties. There are religious groups, all of which follow this extremist line and are looking for more support and more street cred. So there are any number of groups. And then these groups are quite often backed by shadowy financial backers whose identities are not always clear but have their own agenda for bankrolling extremist television stations and parties. And then there are militias, actually armed men, who work for such organizations and groups and receive a salary for making mayhem in the street.
Listeners, we can take your calls for Bobby Ghosh from Time on anything pertaining to this film or alleged film and the embassy attacks around the Middle East now. 212-433-WNYC. I should say protest and in a few cases attacks. 212-433-9692 or post to WNYC.org. click on Brian Lehrer Show. And Bobby, we should mention that one group not behind the film is the actors in it. As On the Media's producer Sarah Abdurrahman first noticed, anytime religion or the prophet is mentioned in this film, the lines seem to have been dubbed in by others, and they've issued a statement the actors have disavowing the film.
They have. They apparently were told that they were making a movie called Desert Warriors about a charismatic figure called Master George. It was only later when the film was dubbed that Master George became Mohammed. And some of the actors, as you say, have released a statement distancing themselves from the theme of the film, and they're very eager for everyone to know that they had nothing to do with the vilification of a religion or a religious icon.
The AP is now reporting, just in the last few minutes, that Nicola Baselli Nakula has told the AP that he is a Coptic Christian and supported the concerns of Christian Copts about their treatment by Muslims, and that he is the filmmaker of this anti-Muslim movie. And actually, this is U.S. law enforcement telling this to AP, citing this Coptic Christian, Nicola Baselli Nakula, as the filmmaker. Is this news to you?
No, there have been some reports that named him earlier, and he was looking like a likely suspect. But this story has about the identity of the filmmaker has gone in so many different directions that at this point it's hard to know to be absolutely certain. Since it comes from law enforcement, it's more credible than a lot of other reports, but I would still wait for another shoe to drop before I draw that conclusion.
The timeline in your article, to take a step back and look at the big picture over time, your timeline dates this outrage industry back to the fatwa on Salman Rushdie over his book Satanic Verses back, 1980 or so. Did that give Salafists the idea of the mileage that they could get with perceived insults to the prophet?
Well, yes. Ironically, that the person who got the most mileage from that was a Shiite, Ayatollah Khomeini, whom the Salafists hate almost as much as they hate people they would regard as infidels. But it certainly set a kind of template for this kind of manufactured outrage. I remember being in India at the time, and there were protests in the street. The book had not even arrived in the country, but there were already people organizing protests, and quite often those people were linked to political parties, sometimes overtly. So it became clear very quickly that this was not a genuine outrage. I'm not suggesting that Muslims were not offended by the book or that they were not unhappy when they finally read it. But a lot of people, long before the book had even arrived in bookshelves, long before the internet era, were being cranked up to be angry and to demonstrate in this way.
So there were these embassy protests going on by Salafists, but in Libya, it seems maybe Al-Qaeda took advantage and actually launched an armed attack, or another scenario, the attack may have even been planned for the 9/11 anniversary prior to these protests over the film. Has that become clear?
It's still a little murky. It's clear that the attack, it seems clear that the attack on the consulate in Benghazi in Libya was organized, and officials in the administration have been telling journalists that this was a complex operation, which suggests it was not a spur-of-the-moment thing. I mean, it is true that in places like Libya, people do come to a protest carrying an RPG, a rocket-propelled grenade launcher, but the nature of the attack, it involved two waves on two separate buildings. One was designed to flush out the embassy staff. The second seems to have been designed to actually kill them. Suggests a level of organization that's not typical of an angry mob. So the suspicion is an Al-Qaeda-related group was either planning this attack all along or decided to take advantage of the mayhem and commotion outside of the consulate. In either case, the fact that there were people protesting outside the consulate certainly helped the cause of those who had planned that, who were responsible for the attack, whether they had planned it or not.
And how much is this still spreading? I woke up this morning to the report of protests, movie-related, in Yemen. About 2 hours ago, Yemen's president apologized to the United States for the embassy attack there. Now I hear this is happening in Sudan and other countries in the region. Is this still a spreading wildfire over this film?
Very much so, and it's sort of typical, I think, now that these kinds of protests very quickly leap from one country to the other. And what we see, and this is another theme of our story, is that in many of these countries, these Arab Spring countries, since the despotic old rulers have been replaced by weak and inexperienced new democratically elected leaders, the result is an ambivalence of what to do with the protests. We know what Mubarak would have done in Egypt if with these kinds of protests, he would have sent in his thugs, his security, to beat any protesters to death if necessary. But President Morsi can't do the same thing. He's an elected representative of his people. He owes his power to the fact that street protests were possible in Egypt. And so he's bound to take a much more cautious view to these things. And, of course, some of the people protesting are political allies of it. So the one of the results of the Arab Spring is that you have this vacuum, and it's being filled by these provocateurs, both in this country and the Middle East, who are stoking up this kind of anger.
What do you make of Egyptian President Morsi's actions over the last day? We have the apology from Libya's government and now from Yemen's government, Libya even asking for outside military assistance to help fight the radicals if necessary. But Morsi, as of yesterday at least, was being very circumspect.
No, he gave a statement in Brussels, I believe it was today, where he's visiting, in which he was not quite as fulsome in his apology, if you like, as the Libyan president, but he did express regret and promise to provide protection for foreign embassies and so forth. But clearly his language has been much more circumspect than we've seen from Yemen or from Libya, and that's a reflection of his own political calculations he has to make in his own country and in the face of his own people. This is an democratically elected leader. He's making a democratic political calculation. It's inadequate for two American years, and there will be consequences for that. It's going to be hard for the Obama administration, for instance, to argue with Congress that Egypt should continue to receive the amount of American aid it does. But it's a calculation that he's made, and he's now going to have to sleep with it.
Robert in Rego Park, you're on WNYC with Bobby Ghosh from Time Magazine. Hello.
Brian, you continue to do an amazing job. My question is this. I stood on this stand, and no one seems to be focusing on it. There were four Americans killed. Why wasn't the military protecting them with volume? I'm talking about 100, 200. Why were they allowed to just basically walk around when their life was in danger?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, Bobby. The Obama administration deployed, I think it was 50 Marines to that consulate in Benghazi after the attack. But since we now know that there have been, budding al-Qaeda-related groups in Libya since the revolution there, why wasn't there more of a military presence at that embassy in the first place?
That's a good question, and it's one I think that'll be asked repeatedly when a thorough investigation takes place. If I had to guess, I would say that it was Benghazi was thought to be friendly towards Americans. After all, that's where the uprising against Gaddafi began. That's where Ambassador Stevens had been cooperating with those who rose against Gaddafi and had good friends. He was well liked. The Americans were more or less well liked. And yes, there were reports of an Al Qaeda related or extremist group operating in that area. But I think people didn't really expect the American consulate to be attacked.
Lynn in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, Lynn. Lynn, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm wondering why this incendiary movie is considered free speech. Why isn't it like yelling fire in the theater when it's known that this is going to be the reaction and it's a global, worldwide fallout?
Well, where would you draw the line, Lynn? Would you have U.S. law prohibit some buffoon or hate monger from saying, Muhammad was a child molester, which is one of the things in this movie? Incendiary as it is, would you actually pass a law to prohibit something like that, and where would you draw the line?
That's a little murkier, but it still seems to me like it's yelling fire in a theater when people know, you know, that this is going to be the outcome.
Lynn, thank you. Bobby, are there different lines that different countries draw with respect to speech like this because of, you know, different, let's say, threat perceptions as to what might happen as a result, even if we all think that violence in reaction to this kind of speech is illegitimate?
I don't think people draw lines according to threat perceptions. I mean, you have extremes. You have in the United States, you can say almost anything, and we celebrate that. That's part of American Western culture. In the other extreme would be, let's say, a place like Pakistan, where you have blasphemy laws and people are routinely brought and punished by courts for perceived insults against Islam. On the other hand, Muslim commentators on Pakistani TV can say the most appalling things about other faiths and not be held to account at all. So there are sort of extremes, and most countries are somewhere in between those two extremes.
Are there other political and socioeconomic forces at play here? Like, we know Europe fought very bloody wars over religion during the Reformation, but violence in response to insults to religion is so far from the norm in the West now, it's hard for people here to understand why that response. Can you explain the response?
Well, it's not one that lends itself to easy understanding, particularly for those in the West who were raised in a very different culture. But within Islam, some things are considered completely and utterly taboo. And one of those things is any kind of depiction of the Prophet Muhammad and his closest early followers. I mean, there have been movies about Muhammad in Muslim countries, but he's never shown. I write in my piece that one of the most famous movies about him is called The Messenger. I beg your pardon, The Message. And in that film, Muhammad is always off camera. His voice is never heard, but you have a cast of characters, including Anthony Quinn, who plays Hamza, his uncle, who talk to the camera as if they were addressing the Prophet. So that's the kind of allowance the filmmakers make to the sensibilities of the local culture. Unfortunately, the people who made this film here showed no such concern for sensibilities at all.
And before you go, Bobby, I want to get your take on the presidential campaign aspects of this. And I want to play one more time the original statement from Mitt Romney early yesterday, or actually late on Tuesday. He actually broke his vow of no politics on 9/11 about 10:30 Tuesday night because he thought this was so important after the protests began and the U.S. Embassy in Egypt had issued a statement condemning the film, and Mitt Romney said this.
I also believe the administration was wrong to stand by a statement sympathizing with those who had breached our embassy in Egypt instead of condemning their actions. It's never too early for the United States government to condemn attacks on Americans and to defend our values. The White House distanced itself last night from the statement, saying it wasn't cleared by Washington. And that reflects the mixed signals they're sending to the world.
So that was Romney actually speaking on Wednesday morning, the 12th, referencing his statement from the night before and the Obama administration distancing itself from its embassy in Egypt's original condemnation of the film. Wow. So it goes round and round. It can be a little confusing. But what was the actual timeline of events here? And was Romney on solid ground?
I don't think he was especially solid ground. People who have a far better and nuanced understanding of the American political cycle than I have sort of have weighed in on this. I think he spoke far too soon. He responded to a comment from a single staffer in the embassy in Cairo, and he responded without taking into consideration the circumstances in which those staffers found themselves. And And I think he has rightly been roundly criticized for behaving, going off half-cocked in that manner.
Bobby Ghosh, editor-at-large for Time Magazine, has the cover story in the brand-new issue now on the embassy attacks and the film that sparked the violence and the agents of outrage, as he calls them, on both sides. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, Greg David on why Fashion Week may be overrated as a runway to economic growth in New York City. Stay with us.